Greetings. My name is Joe Greaves. I'm the Executive Director of the Alameda Contra Costa Medical Association. The ACCMA and our sister medical societies in Napa and Solano are laser focused on supporting our members during this unprecedented time. We are doing this in a lot of ways: communication, coordinating with local officials, state and federal advocacy, workforce, and practice management guidance. We are here to help. You can reach us the same way as always. Call 510-654-5383 or email accma@accma.org. Although our physical offices are closed and we are not hosting any in-person events, we are fully operational and we are here to help you through this challenging time. I want to emphasize that this is an evolving situation, and accordingly, some of the information discussed during this interview may have changed since we recorded at 2 p.m. on Thursday, March 19th. We are posting regular updates to our website, which you can access at www.accma.org/COVID-19. So please check for the latest. Doctors' offices and other healthcare providers are considered essential businesses and are encouraged to stay open despite the order to shelter at home. But physicians are also being actively encouraged to utilize telemedicine whenever possible to support social distancing efforts in our community. As a result, we've gotten a lot of questions from members about how to do telemedicine, especially when you haven't done it before and may not have the infrastructure already in place. So we are really pleased to be joined today by David Ginsberg, President and CEO of Private Plan Associates, who's an expert in electronic medical records, health information technology, and privacy and security rules. He has been a HIPAA advisor to the ACCMA and CMA since 2002. We've had a long relationship with David, and we really trust his advice and can't thank him enough for being available on short notice to help our members. This interview will be part of a series of videos we are producing to help members, and today's focus is on how to get up and running in your practice quickly. So David, welcome. Great to see you.
Well, thank you, Joe.
Let's jump in. So first, many of our members are affiliated. They may be part of a medical group, foundation, health system, or part of an IPA. What advice would you give somebody who has some sort of affiliation? Where should they start?
You know, I think it makes the most sense if a provider physician has a current affiliation with an IPA or large medical group that they reach out to them initially to see if they already have telehealth, telemedicine solutions that as an IPA or group have been vetted for security and can be provided to that individual physician. That could potentially save the physicians the time and energy of trying to determine what the best solution would be. And if there's a solution that has a cost to it, they might be able to get it through their IPA or their medical group at no charge.
Great. Okay, thanks. So we've heard a couple days ago that the administration in Washington has waived HIPAA enforcement, and the intention behind that was really to facilitate telemedicine. My understanding as of now, and again, this may change, so I want to encourage anyone who's listening to please check our website for updates, but that as of now, the state has not yet followed suit with respect to state privacy laws. Can you break down what your understanding of the current lay of the land is for California physicians?
Yes, that's correct, Joseph. So basically, the Confidentiality of Medical Information Act, which is a California civil code and has been in place for many, many years, has not been waived. So that is still in effect. And there's a couple things that are important about CMIA. It does provide for the requirement to have a level of privacy protections in place for patients. And it also actually allows a patient who feels that their privacy has been violated to bring an action against a physician or other entity for doing so. That is a civil action, trying to sue them. Whereas with HIPAA, an individual does not have a private cause of action, meaning an individual person, a patient, cannot sue a physician for violating HIPAA. Only HIPAA, the Office of Civil Rights, Department of Health and Human Services, can do that. But under California law, an individual patient can bring an action. So, and also an individual patient might be able to just claim other kinds of civil damages based upon their privacy being violated. So simply because the HIPAA waiver is in effect doesn't give a get out of jail free card to our physicians in the state who are covered entities under HIPAA and also practice in California. And furthermore, there hasn't been a blanket waiver. What it is, and the description of what is described, is that the Office for Civil Rights will exercise its enforcement discretion and will not impose penalties for noncompliance with the regulatory requirements under the HIPAA rules against covered healthcare providers in connection with the good faith provision of telehealth during this public health emergency. So there's some very key points to that statement. First of all, this is a limited time. It's during the public health emergency. Now, we don't know how long this is going to be, a month, several months, more, we don't know. But it is a temporary time. And it's also saying that they have enforcement discretion to not impose penalties. But that doesn't mean that they wouldn't, at some subsequent point, come back and do an investigation for a breach or some egregious act that resulted in the patient privacy or security compromised, and maybe not enforce a penalty, but require the healthcare organization to go through a corrective action. And in addition, there are some other things to be aware of that are actually built into the information that they say. Basically, they do recommend that there be the providers, in fact, they say clearly, providers are encouraged to notify patients if they're using any third-party application for telehealth that could introduce privacy risks, and providers should enable all available encryption and privacy modes when using sub applications. So I think that's really critical. While on one hand, they're saying we're not going to impose a penalty. On the other hand, it's very clear that providers not only are encouraged to notify patients if they're using any system that could introduce a privacy risk, but they should enable all available encryption and privacy modes when using such applications. So again, the way I interpret that is that you need to be mindful and careful, select applications or systems that will encrypt the data, be sure that you are doing your due diligence and all the normal safeguards from a security perspective that would need to be done. And don't count on the fact that you can't or won't be penalized, because even having a corrective action, while there might be no money involved, is a penalty of time and resources that you have to go through the investigation and then follow up with new documentation and so forth. So again, it should be business as usual in terms of protecting patient privacy and security.
Okay, so you know, if I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds like your recommendation, if you're a physician who hasn't done telemedicine and you need to do so quickly, is to still try to do so in a way that's going to comply with HIPAA and state CMIA privacy and security laws. Is that
absolutely correct? Especially because there are so many of them that are available that will.
Great. And I also want to apologize for the dog barking in the back. We're all at home right now, so you're hearing my dog Buffy. So apologies for that. next question. If you have a doc who really doesn't have a readily available solution through somebody that they're affiliated with, what do you recommend? What's the fastest, easiest way to get up and running? And also, what kind of protocols should be followed?
Well, it really depends upon how much money you want to spend and what you have available. So for example, if you want to do it the right way, I would recommend using one of the existing and commonly used video chat and video teleconferencing systems like Zoom. There's Zoom for healthcare. They'll actually provide a HIPAA business associate agreement. Or you could use Skype for Business. And if you have Skype available, you can use Google G Suite Hangouts for meetings, and that they will also, Google will provide you a HIPAA business associate agreement. or there are other organizations. For example, you might be able to do this using GoToMeeting, WebEx, and some of the other meeting technologies, even RingCentral, etc. They may not sign or may not have a HIPAA business associate agreement, but typically they do have a very secured environment for doing your online video chats with patients. Also, don't forget that it's easy to use Apple FaceTime or to use WhatsApp. WhatsApp is a very common application. It has end-to-end encryption. Apple FaceTime is very secure. It has end-to-end encryption. And those are things that can be set up, like WhatsApp can be set up both on your computer that has a webcam, or it could be also set up on the physician's smartphone and allow you to do both a video and a telephonic conversation that is essentially encrypted from endpoint to endpoint. So in those cases, you won't get a business associate agreement like with Apple FaceTime or necessarily with WhatsApp, but you will have a secure encrypted environment. And there are many, many providers across the world have been using those kinds of applications already for secure transactions like this.
What are the implications if they go with an app that doesn't have a business associates agreement?
So right now, that is probably the clearest thing among within the the emergency declaration by the Department of Health and Human Services. So what that essentially is that if they cannot get a business associate agreement currently, then that will be an area that the Office for Civil Rights will waive the enforcement on that for the time being. So essentially, on one hand, they're saying we would prefer you're using, in fact, the actual language in the declaration is covered healthcare providers, so that would be ACCMA physicians, that seek additional privacy protections for telehealth while using video communication products should provide such services through technology vendors that are HIPAA compliant and will enter into HIPAA business associate agreements in connection with the provision of their video communication products. And then they actually provide a list of things like I talked about, Zoom for healthcare, Google, G Suites, etc. There's a note in the guidance from the OCR that says, essentially, under this notice, the OCR will not impose penalties against covered healthcare providers for the lack of a BAA, business associate agreement, with video communication vendors, or any other non-compliance with the rules that relate to the good faith provision during the COVID-19 emergency. So again, on one hand, they're saying you should provide such services through vendors, technology vendors that are HIPAA compliant and will provide a BAA. But on the other hand, they say if they don't, they're not going to impose penalties against that during this interim time. So Joe, here's another area. Let's assume and let's pray even that the COVID-19 public health emergency is no more than 3 months in duration. And at a certain point, and it ceases to become a public health emergency and just becomes another ongoing concern. So if I as a provider have gone with plan G of a system that won't provide me a business associate agreement and maybe isn't HIPAA compliant, and I've started using it, and I'm using it through this emergency, and when the emergency, quote, is no longer a national declared emergency, I'm just continuing to use it. In fact, my patients are familiar with it. They're going to reach me on that. I'm going to continue to use that to communicate with them as well as have them come back to the office. Will I then remember to go back and say, oh, I can't keep using that vendor because that vendor was only okay during this waiver time period? So again, I worry about the unintended consequences when we use non-compliant technology and simply because your members are so busy already to try to remember to stop using that after the emergency and then try to choose something that will be, again, secure.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it sounds like for the time being, any of the solutions that you mentioned are workable, but that if they have the choice between something that could be a more permanent solution or something that would be a temporary solution, to definitely go for the more permanent solution. Can I ask you again to just read through what those are, the solutions that you mentioned before that are HIPAA compliant?
Yes. So, in fact, I'm going to read a list to you that actually was in the Office for Civil Rights Communication, Skype for Business, UpDocs. UpDocs is a third-party software for patient communication, and some of your members might actually already have it because it plugs in to Amazing Charts and a few of the other EHRs. V as in Victor, C, V-S-E-E. Zoom for healthcare. I have the most experience with Zoom myself. I like that particular product. I'm not endorsing it. I don't get paid to say that, but it's a product that's very easy to use. Doxy.me, D-O-X-Y.me. Google G Suite Hangouts Meet. So that's part of the Google G Suite, and you can get Google G Suites for Business, and they have something called Hangouts Meet. So all of those would be available to you as products that we know will provide or say they'll enter into HIPAA Business Associate Agreement. Then if you kind of cascade one layer down to organizations that won't provide a Business Associate Agreement, but we feel strongly are secure, we could include things such as GoToMeeting, WebEx, and RingCentral, all of which, though, you will pay for. And then finally, if you want the fastest, easiest way to do it, something like Apple FaceTime, Facebook Messenger Video Chat, Google Hangouts or Skype on your smartphone or just on your computer, and WhatsApp, WHATSAPP. WhatsApp is another one that you can have synchronously on your phone as well as on your computer, and then would provide encrypted communications as well. But if I might, I want to be sure that we reiterate, all of these are what we would consider secure private methods of communication, in some ways not different than you picking up the phone and dialing the patient, which is establishing a connection that is secure. What's not secure is to use something like Facebook Live, TikTok, Twitch, or some of these other video chat methods that are used amongst and with social media. They are not allowed under any circumstances. And in fact, within the notice that was released by the Office of Civil Rights, they say very clearly, under this notice, however, Facebook Live, Twitch, TikTok, and similar video communication applications are public-facing and should not be used in the provision of telehealth by covered healthcare providers.
Great. So just one other follow-up question on that point. If somebody is signing up for one of the services that is HIPAA compliant, is the business associates agreement signed and executed as they're registering for the service? Do they need to take any extra steps? Or is there a healthcare version of all of those products that you mentioned?
Well, it depends. So like with Zoom, there is a healthcare version. You still have to go ahead and then download their business associate agreement. With Google G Suites, you would have to download it. Here is something that your member should be aware of. Normally, we want you to use your HIPAA business associate agreement with any business associate. And in fact, the California Medical Association and Private Plan, my company, almost 20 years ago, or maybe a little less than that, came up with the correct kind of business associate agreement that was reviewed by CMA legal counsel as the one that you should use. And we still feel that that's what you should use. But many of the large vendors like Google and Zoom and some of these other folks, they won't sign your business associate agreement. So Microsoft, which owns Skype, they won't sign yours, but they will give you their kind of generic BA agreement. And I think that, I don't think, I mean, that is perfectly acceptable in this scenario that you would then take the BA agreement that they provide, because you are at least showing good faith that you've understood the regulation, you're getting the BA agreement, and that does bind them to certain basic standards. It doesn't go as far, Joe, as what the California Medical Association and private plan would like a BA to do, a BA agreement rather, but it is sufficient.
Okay, great. Can you talk a little bit about the cost of the solutions, in particular the ones that are HIPAA compliant and could be longer term solutions? I know many of the others that you mentioned are free.
Zoom, the last time I looked, was $200 a month per provider. So that comes with a price tag. GoToMeeting, the versions, the business versions, they'll depend anywhere from maybe $50 a month upwards. They all have different pricing ratios depending on how many. In some cases, are you buying a business license or just license for one provider? So I think it'd be fair to say it could be anywhere from $30 or $40 a month upwards.
Great. And are all of these solutions accessible from multiple locations? If you have some folks in the office, some folks at home?
Yes. So in fact, almost any video chat, even Facebook, which we don't want you to use in terms of social media platform, even Skype, WhatsApp, Apple FaceTime, you can bring in multiple people into them. The fact is, though, sometimes that's a little difficult, and depending whether you're using an internet signal or not, you may not have the best bandwidth. The beauty of these applications that are designed to be interactive video and web conferencing applications is that they're really nicely designed to have somebody dial in either by phone, come in via a URL, an internet connection, and then be able to see them. Then you can patch in other people. And that becomes particularly helpful, especially if you have an easy interface to do that. If, for example, in the Bay Area, where there's so many diverse ethnicities and many languages spoken, that you may sometimes need to have an interpreter that you bring in along with the patient themselves. So now you don't have just a single call between the provider, physician, and their patient, but maybe you have a call that's including the interpreter as well.
Great. So I know this is an area that may be changing, and again, want to remind any listeners to please check accma.org/COVID-19 for the latest information. But we've had questions about whether it's acceptable to just use a phone or whether there also needs to be a video component. So I'm wondering if you can comment both on permissibility, but then also any impact in terms of reimbursement, variation by payers, anything you might know about that.
Well, I would say it's a hotly debated bit of confusion right now since this announcement a couple of days ago. The best I can do is go back to the actual announcement that the way they described it. And in this particular Medicare telemedicine healthcare provider fact sheet. Now, bear in mind, we're talking about Medicare and their reimbursement. We're not talking about Medi-Cal in this case or commercial payer. But what they say is currently Medicare patients may use telecommunication technology for office, hospital visits, and other services that generally occur in person. And then they say the provider must use an interactive audio and video telecommunication system that permits real-time communication between the distant site and the patient at home. Distant site practitioners who can furnish and get payment for covered telehealth services subject to state law can include physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, nurse midwives, anesthetists, psychologists, social workers, dietitians, and nutritional professionals. So they make it a very clear statement that says must use an interactive audio and video telecommunications system. So now my interpretation, and let me just reiterate, that's mine. It's not official. Well, Joe, you're still waiting, as I think we all are, from something from CMA or AMA to clarify. My interpretation is that a telephone call is interactive in its own way. I mean, I'm calling you up, we're speaking. But what this wants is a interactive audio and video telecommunication system that permits real-time communication. And I'm seeing that as in the spirit of what we were talking about with Zoom, Skype, WhatsApp, and FaceTime, and these other truly interactive audio and video telecommunication systems that are real-time. So right now, I'm going to say it's unclear whether just being on the phone and calling the patient will let you get the as if you saw them in the patient in the I'm sorry as if you saw them in the office reimbursement. So until you get further clarification, I think it's maybe safe to say as of today it better be an interactive audio and video communication system till we know for sure differently.
Great, that's really helpful. Thank you. So today, the Department of Managed Healthcare came out with an order requiring health plans to reimburse telemedicine and telephone visits the same as in-person office visits. You've commented on the CMS guidance for Medicare, which is that it appears, although it's not clear yet, that it does require the use of both audio and visual interactive technology in order to be reimbursed at the same rate for an in-person visit. Anything else in the reimbursement landscape that you'd like to comment on?
Well, I would think our physicians need to be cautious. So for example, that announcement we know is going to mean that Medi-Cal will cover these. And by the way, in almost every other state, the state Medicaids, which is how they're called in other states, have announced in the last day or two that they will cover telehealth as if it was in the office as part of their coverage. But what about the private payers, right? So in the case of the announcement that you just noted, if you are a managed care entity, an HMO or other that's doing business under their regulatory authority in California, that applies. But does it apply to the Carpenters Union 977 of Oakland? And I'm making that up, right? But it's any of these what might be trade or self-insured under ERISA health plans that are offered by an employer or a plan sponsor. I'm not sure whether they will cover these. I think it may be up to them unless the law is extending to them and there's nothing in the regulations that you just described, Joe, or rather that announcement that might extend to them. So I would think that it might be helpful to just confirm with those particular plans before you start using them or rather treating their patients that they are going to cover. I suspect most of them will, because it's in the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish for this emergency. I don't think it's going to be a big issue, but you shouldn't be guaranteed, whereas with Medicaid, Medi-Cal, with Medicare, with the Department of Managed Care, health plans, like the health plans, for example, that Hill Medical Group administers or any of the other big medical groups administer, those you know you'll be covered because they are part of that Department of Managed Care plans.
Yeah, I do know that Organized Medicine right now is pushing for the CMS guidance on Medicare to also extend to ERISA plans. So I know that's in the works, but I don't believe there's been any announcement of it yet. So last question is if you could comment a little bit on remote employees. For some of our members, they're going to have some folks in the office and some staff, for example, billing, appointment scheduling calls, working from home. And those home-based employees may be accessing cloud-hosted EHRs or other sensitive business systems from their home computer. Anything we should advise members as it relates to additional training for this from a HIPAA perspective?
Absolutely. If your members don't already have a remote use policy that they require their workforce, their employees to read and potentially sign, that has always been for now 17 years, it's been the right and best practice that you should have. And typically the things that your workforce should confirm and agree to when they're working remotely from home is that they should be using a secure way to get into your networks. Now, if you're using a cloud-based system that they're merely going to use their computer to log into, then it should be all the normal, good, strong password controls that are required. But the real issues we have with home use are they using the company, the physician-supplied laptop or computer to do that, or my home computer. So if I'm using my home computer, is it secure? Is it the same computer that my children use? Could there be some malware? Are there malware antivirus products on that? And what about my Wi-Fi, Joe? So the Wi-Fi in my house, is it encrypted with WPA2 or greater encryption? Or is it set up so that actually anybody within 50 feet of my house could actually snoop on all the communications that I'm doing and see them? Now, the waiver doesn't get you out of jail for that. If that happens and you're just not taking good precautions and controls with your workforce, then you've got a HIPAA issue that you're going to have to deal with. The other thing we'd like to be sure that your home workforce know is they should work in as private an area as possible. That can be hard and challenging when you're in the home, but they should not be in a place where other family members, friends, or visitors can snoop, shoulder surf, see what they're doing. And they should be sure when they get up and away from their computer, when it's logged in to your EHR or your company network, or rather your physician network, anything else, that they actually log it off, even if they're just gone for a couple of minutes, so nobody can see what's on the screen. And then finally, don't write those passwords down and keep them on the keyboard or pasted to the computer that anybody else can see and use. Excuse me.
Great. Those are some wonderful tips. So I think that about wraps up our questions, at least as of now. And I just want to thank you again, David, for this great information. I know our members will really appreciate it. If anyone wants to get in touch with you or to get help from Private Plan with telemedicine implementation, HIPAA privacy issues, or anything else, what's the best way to find you?
So the best way to find us would be probably just to email me directly. And that is D as in David Ginsberg, G-I-N-S-B-E-R-G, at privateplan.com. Private Plan is P as in Peter, R, I, V as in Victor, A, plan, plan.com. And then Joe, I'm sure if they called up the ACCMA office, I'm sure one of your people could probably get them to my number or email if they couldn't catch that from this video or this audio presentation rather.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're happy to route people to you if we get calls. So with that, I want to thank you again and want to remind our listeners that the ACCMA is fully operational and we're here to help. And we really would love to hear what your needs are. Any barriers that you're encountering, please let us know. You can call us at 510-654-5383 or send us an email at accma@accma.org. And then please check our webpage, www.accma.org/COVID-19 for regular updates. Thank you very much.
Thank you.